Dana Kester McKay reporting for Delmarva Public Radio. You're listening to the sounds of the Tremé Brass Band and a great party getting started in Salisbury, Maryland. But don't just take my word for it. Here's what festival goer Lori Carter had to say about it last night.
Hi, my name is Lori Carter. The music, the sound, the excitement, the people just enjoying themselves, and the band. Oh, the Tremé Band was just fabulous, and the dancer was awesome. It was a beautiful thing to see everyone just coming together and just walking down the street of North Division and just having a ball, a great time. The great American community we are.
And here's what Salisbury Mayor Jake Day had to say.
Welcome to Salisbury, Maryland, the capital of the Eastern Shore. What a way to kick off the biggest party Salisbury has ever seen. Am I right? My name is Jake Day. I'm the mayor of this beautiful city. And I have occasionally, as mayor, heard from people that they really want us to bring parades back to downtown Salisbury. That was one heck of a parade. Am I right? Yeah.
With the introduction of dignitaries like City Council President Jack Heath, Maryland Governor Larry Hogan, and First Lady Yumi Hogan, and Purdue Farms Chairman Jim Purdue and Jan Purdue, who served as honorary festival chairs, the National Folk Festival was in full swing when it opened last night. Today, from noon to 10 p.m., you'll be able to see the work of talented artisans and hear about Maryland traditions from folks like Janice Marshall, who's a sixth-generation Smith Islander. Today and tomorrow, you'll find her in the Maryland Folklife Traditions area talking about crab picking and the famous Smith Island cake. Here's a little preview of what you can hear there.
So I asked my aunt, she was in her 90s. I said, now, Mylena was my grandma. I said, do you remember Mylena making these cakes? She said, well, we didn't have them a lot. She said, but Christmas time especially. And as I look back, I don't remember my grandmother having a cook stove with an oven on it. They had the portable little bakers, they called them. And my grandma had a wood stove that she heated the kitchen, and she would cook her beans on top. And then when she wanted to bake some biscuits or a cake, she would take this little tin baker and set on top of the wood stove to get hot. A lot of people didn't have ovens then, so it was a lot easier to bake a smaller layer and stack them up than it was a thick layer. I remember that, you know, my grandmother and my mother-in-law, they only made like a six-layer cake. That was it. But now it's got to six, seven, eight. Eight is my limit. But some go higher. But the traditional Smith Island cakes were usually around six layers. My mother-in-law always did scratch cakes. She said, I don't like box cakes much, honey. That's how she'd say it. You can make it from scratch. But if Mylena had a box of Duncan Hines cake mix, she would dump that in a heartbeat.
Life on the water is on full display at the festival, with beautiful skipjacks along the waterfront and storytellers talking about the heritage of the watermen. One such man is Captain Kermit Travers, a much-respected African-American skipjack captain. Recently, I talked to him about how he got started.
I went to get on a boat with some of the captains that that could catch arthritis that been there for a while. So I didn't think I was good enough. So my cousin, Nathaniel Cornish, he talked to Captain Eugene Wheatley, and they got me on the boat. We worked that day, and I beat two of them, about 30-something bushel. And he said, where have you been all this time? He said, I'll tell you what. He said, you want to work? He said, you want to stay on the boat? I said, yes, sir, as long as I can. He said, well, he said, you got a berth. He said, as long as this boat moves, he said, you got a berth.
While also serving as a deputy sheriff in Dorchester County, Captain Travers spent many years working on that skipjack. When Captain Wheatley became gravely ill, he asked Captain Travers to take over his boat after he passed.
All the crew gonna stick with me because they knew I could drive the boat. That's a lot of responsibility to get behind the wheel of a skipjack because you got everything in your hands. You got the crew, you got everything. And if any decision is made, you have to make the decision yourself. Because my mother always told me, she said, if you want to be good, she said, you might not be the best. She said, and then again, you might. She said, but you got to try. Try hard. Put everything you got in it if you want to be good.
That's the musical wisdom shared by the Singing and Praying Bands of Maryland and Delaware, which is led by Reverend Samuel Colbert, and who are also performing today. I spoke to Reverend Colbert on the phone recently about the revival of a gospel tradition that has influenced every American musical genre from jazz, pop, R&B, to rap and hip-hop.
Well, what they can expect is something different. It isn't choir singing. It's not necessarily a bunch of voices that are harmonizing, but it's a we come together in deep worship and in deep appreciation. It's something that gets into your system, and the longer you sing it, the more that beat that speaks to your spiritual soul. This group originated, the history goes way back prior to the Civil War, and it originated around the camp meetings of the United Methodist Church. It is gospel. It's more of a ring shout type, a cappella type singing. There is no music. The verses are lined out, and then the members chant the words after it. So it's more of a ring shout that originated from the west coast of Africa. And the slaves brought them over with them into the southern states. And for the most part, we have held that type of tradition in our ministry. My grandmother was a part of the same prayer band movement. Camp meetings was a big thing within the Methodist churches up and down the eastern coast from, say, North Carolina up to Philadelphia, and then on the eastern shore, Dorchester County and parts of Sussex County in Delaware. And we have kept that connection going for over 100 years.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to Delmarva Public Radio. This is Dana Kester McCabe, and we're talking about the National Folk Festival being held in Salisbury, Maryland this weekend. Anna Pascalucci is a master of Baltimore screen painting. At 4 p.m. today, she and Lisa Marie Penn will be demonstrating their craft. Anna and I talked by phone about how this uniquely Maryland tradition began.
To appreciate Baltimore screen painting, you need to be familiar with the city row houses and city life in the early 1900s when screen painting began. Baltimore was a shipping port, as it is now, and an industrial city. Smokestacks poured billowing black smoke into the air. There was very little greenery in areas where block after block, row after row of the same style townhouses, also known as row houses, were built. There were no green grassy front yards, and the windows and doors opened directly at the sidewalk. And remember, back then there was no air conditioning, so windows and doors had to be left open for air. Painted screens emerged to offer some color to that drab city life, and they also addressed the issue of privacy to the row house residents. In 1913, a grocery store owner, his name was William Octavik, painted his wares on colorful fruits, vegetables, meats to help advertise his wares. And it worked. Not only did it attract patrons to his grocery, but the neighbors liked the painted screen so much that they soon were asking Mr. Octavik to paint scenes on their own house windows. And then there was also a surprise bonus along with these screens. You couldn't see through the painted window screen or door screen into the house very well, past the painting. And even better yet, you could see clearly straight out from your inside your house. So before long, literally hundreds of self-taught painters found that going door-to-door painting screens was a good way to earn some extra money.
Anna Pascalucci and Lisa Marie Penn are one of several Maryland Tradition's apprenticeship team award-winning pairs performing or demonstrating their craft at the festival this weekend.
The purpose of this award, the Prentice Award, is to support up to 1 year of study in folk life or living cultural traditions. During the study period, I'm going to quote them here, a master folk life practitioner passes down his or her knowledge to an apprentice in an effort to support the vitality of folk life in Maryland. So Lisa and I have teamed up and we're honored to have received a Maryland Traditions Apprenticeship Award through the Maryland State Arts Council for 2017-2018 for 1 year. And Lisa and I have both been painting screens for quite a while, but now we join forces and are together to help promote the art because we both love screen painting. We both share that love.
Jay Armsworthy is a school bus driver by day, but bluegrass is his life. With his band, Eastern Tradition, Jay has performed throughout the Chesapeake Bay region and along the East Coast. He's also invested quite a bit of time documenting the musical heritage of Southern Maryland.
We will provide a family-style traditional bluegrass show and an entertaining show. You know, we do a lot of traditional standard bluegrass tunes, what people call cover songs of Flat and Scruggs. We'll do some Stanley Brothers and Reno and Smalley, just a little bit of everything. Growing up, I just loved it. It's an American art form. The bluegrass people seem friendly. The bluegrass bands, they'll come out and mingle and socialize, you know, with you. And it's more in a up close and impersonal music. And there's still, you know, a lot of bluegrass that stays true to the traditional form. And it's a country soul, you know. It's a music that has feelings, and the songs just tell stories about real life, you know, real events, you know, happen in people's lives, and I'm just a diehard bluegrass fan. I eat sweet bluegrass, and it's my favorite music, and I mean, I like other genres of music, but bluegrass is just, just been where it's at. And the older I get, I find that I'm appreciating the older music more, older bluegrass. As far as the folk festival, it's bringing together a good variety, tradition of groups throughout Maryland. And I think that from what I've seen with the lineup, I think it's a great variety. I'm excited. I can't wait for the event. And I'm glad it's in the state of Maryland for the next 3 years.
There's lots to see and learn at the festival today. Scrapple making, how to prepare muskrat, how to make crab cakes and fried oysters. There are square dance and salsa dance lessons. there will be a junior ranger swearing in, and the Greenbelt City Stars, a champion jump rope team, will demonstrate their acrobatic dance moves. There's plenty for everyone to celebrate the great American community today and tomorrow in downtown Salisbury. As we close, here's a sample of the Phil Wiggins Blues House Party, who you can catch later today at the National Folk Festival. This is Dana Kester McCabe, reporting for Delmarva Public Radio.